Welcome to Aging Gayfully. We're about adventure, leisure, travel, being a citizen of the world, traveling to destinations, and being a part of the global community as we age and prosper in body, mind, and spirit.
Welcome to Aging Gayfully. I'm Josh.
And I am Chris. And Josh, you know, I have made it through a week of my 67th year, and I'm still aging gayfully. What do you think?
I think that you don't look a day over 65.
I think I will take that as a compliment.
You should. You should.
What about my new glasses? What do you think?
I think that they're great. I like them a lot. Now, I'm trying to see them through the video feed. Are they multicolored?
No, they're kind of multicolored on the side, but they're two different shades of green because I want everybody to be envious.
I thought it's because you are becoming quite an exceptional plant dad.
Well, I am. You know, I have this vision that part of my process of aging gayfully, is I didn't have much of a green thumb when I was growing up, or I hated cutting the grass, especially when my father told me I had to recut the grass because he didn't like the way it was cut the first time. But that's kind of what growing up with an alcoholic parent will do to you from time to time. That's a whole other episode, by the way. But I've kind of gotten into orchids and plants, and I've got two orchids that are a year old that are about to rebloom. And I'm thinking it's almost like having a kid, but I don't have to spread my legs. I just have to spread the vines.
Thank you for that.
Do you have a visual?
Yes. You spreading your legs and plants popping out.
Oh no,
out.
You don't want me spreading my, no, that's.
But aren't orchids notoriously difficult to care for? Because you don't just water them. Don't you take them out and you soak them in water or something?
You soak them in water. You kind of clean them where the roots are, and you put this different type of, I would say mulch in it. But I've got two of my seven or eight orchids that I've moved them around. I put them outside when it's warm, and now they're about to bloom.
That's just like raising children. What are you kidding?
Well, I haven't been down that road. I would need an instruction book.
Did you ever in your life entertain having children at any point, being a father to children?
Not one time. I have no regrets. Interesting. Maybe I'll be regretful as I get older and don't have anybody to take care of me. But I got Josh and Amanda I can move in with. So
wait a second.
It's kind of like, you know, I was on with my friend Monica from a couple of weeks ago, and I was teasing her, but, you know, we were talking about kind of she's a few years younger than me, but I said, well, you know, I thought you were going to take care of me, but you've never given me your address. And I'm thinking, no, wait a minute, Josh has never given me his address. So it's like, what's this up with this post office box stuff? You know, how am I going to find my place to age gayfully at your house if I don't have the address? What's up with that?
Well, I don't want to go to my post office box one day and have you sticking out of it. So
that's where my legs would be spread. So,
well, it's interesting that we go in this direction with the conversation, because this is kind of what you had texted me that you wanted to talk about. You know, a lot of times when gay couples want to have a kid, they turn to IVF.
In vitro fertilization. And it's, you know, it's not, it's just not something that gay families do. It's something that hetero families have to do.
Absolutely.
When they can't naturally reproduce. And it's like, you know, what's up with this ruling that these frozen eggs our kids. What's up with
So that? For those of you who have not been following, the Alabama Supreme Court recently defined frozen embryos as children. And that has sent shockwaves through the IVF industry. It's a $54 billion industry. It's pretty huge. IVF births account for 2% of American births, which 2% of all of the people in America is actually a pretty substantial number of folks. Mm-hmm. IVF clinics in Alabama are starting to suspend operations because of the implications that if they mishandle a frozen embryo, you know, there could be some sort of ramifications legally, and not to mention the fact that as a regular matter of process, the frozen embryos that they don't use and the eggs and the other material, you know, is disposed of anyway. Again, legal ramifications there.
You have to wonder what it would be like being just in a person's mind or body for 30 seconds to understand how somebody so diversely different processes their beliefs on something like this. I just can't. And again, I, a few years of theology and philosophy behind me and a variety of conversations with people on both sides of the fence, I've never really been able to grasp how these conclusions are come to that have such a major impact on people that these decision makers don't have a clue who they are.
Well, here's the problem that I see, and that is the belief system that gave birth to this ruling, forgive the wordplay.
no pun intended.
Is sharply divided as well. I'm going to refer to you to an article I was reading today from the BBC, which, by the way, great place to get your news, not a sponsor.
Great place. BBC is a great place to get your news, yeah.
And devout Christians themselves are divided. Allow me to read a little bit of this article. When Alabama's Supreme Court defined frozen embryos as children, the shock and confusion was immediate. Major hospitals pulled fertility services, and would-be parents scrambled for clarity on what would happen next. So it gives the story of this one lady who had been taking fertility drugs for 10 months and was days away from her first IVF treatment when the ruling was handed down. So that caused the fertility clinic to pause their work. And she says, you know, the journey to becoming parents is different for every single couple, mentally, emotionally, and financially. This ruling has added more unnecessary anxiety to something that is already so hard. For a devout Christian like her, the ruling giving its consequences for what she sees clearly as a process to create life is even more difficult to comprehend.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and the article goes on to talk about how in the ruling, Chief Justice Tom Parker rooted his decision and his statement in a theologically based view of the sanctity of life. So, number one, the Christians themselves are divided. And right. Number two, the very small minority that we have producing or seeking to produce, I guess, some version of Handmaid's Tale in America has way too much power for how small a minority they are.
Right. And how did that happen? How did we get to a point to where minority is ruling?
I don't have an answer to that. Money, I guess, I suppose.
Money plays a role in it. But I think that to kind of pull this around full circle is how does rulings like this impact us as we age? And allow us to age gayfully. And because that's, you know, the theme of this is not in one sense to be all orientation wise. It's about aging happily in a free, loving society. And I don't mean that in the kumbaya. I mean, just kind of like, why is it so important for some people in leadership to feel like they have to be involved in other people's, why do they feel like they have to impose their beliefs into other people's beliefs when they don't really know what's going on with that individual? And I guess, it, you know, if we dig in a little bit deeper, it's that delicate balance between church and state that I think has been really skewed here in the last few years. Or maybe it's always been that way. I don't know. I'm just paying more attention to it. But if a politician is making a decision based on theology and they're not trained in theology, which is, I'd be willing to bet this person probably isn't. Well, where's the balance there? Does something like this impact us? How does it impact us as obviously it impacted this woman that you mentioned in the article. And how does that impact us as we age? I know we're kind of getting deep into the woods here, but I think it bears conversation about where do you find your peace and happiness? There's some folks that are set out to be pioneers, advocates. There's some folks that are set out to be writers and thought provokers. But you know, where is that balance that everyone is created equal? I'm thinking that's kind of going by the wayside these days.
It seems to me that whenever a ruling like this is handed down or someone tries to pass an anti-this or an anti-that law,
mm-hmm.
you know, I ask myself, what are they afraid of? Because obviously they are using the power that they have or that they've taken to try to protect themselves and to protect the people like them. And so what are you afraid of? Why are you afraid of women having, you know, their own right to making the decisions about what it is they do and what they do with their bodies? Why are you afraid of people who aren't Christians? Why are you afraid of gay people? Why are you afraid of brown people? Why are you afraid? What are you afraid of losing?
What are you afraid of?
I guarantee you that this is all rooted in the notion that we don't want to give up our place, our rightful place of power and privilege in society. And that's the bigger picture thing here. Now, if we pull in and we say, what lesson can we learn since we cannot control others, even though some folks through law and through through Supreme Court rulings seek to control others. I know the reality is we cannot, there's very little that we can control in life. Are we going to decide, because so much in life is out of our control, to be scared? Or are we going to decide to just concentrate on the things that we can control and just be content with that? That's the personal lesson that I take. When I see shit like this happening on my news screen, I'm like, well, I certainly don't ever want to be so afraid that I start to attack other people or I start to exercise power over other people to protect myself. That's the personal lesson that I take.
Right. And I think as I've gotten older, my role as an advocate has been a little bit more defined, that in a sense that I may not be able to change somebody else's thought process, but I can certainly demonstrate love, care, and commitment to everybody that I come in contact with. That doesn't mean we're all going to like each other or are we all going to understand each other, but there's this thing about we're all created equal. I mean, that's... That seems to have gotten lost in these discussions. And why should I impose? Can I? Is it okay to impose my personal beliefs on somebody else? I don't think that's what leaders are supposed to be. Leaders are there to protect the people. And I think we're seeing a devoid of leadership in a lot of areas.
Yeah, we're seeing dictatorship.
We're seeing dictatorship.
We're seeing right. bullying. Mm-hmm. We're seeing fear-based decision-making, but we're not seeing service.
Right. And I'm a very big proponent of servant leadership. And really the core behind servant leadership is the leader puts themselves second. Whether your business is a philosophy of servant leadership, where you're paying attention to the core, and the leader is focused on making sure the core is in a good spot. Now that's a generalization of the whole theory around servant leadership, but it can't be all about yourself.
It calls to mind this thing that happened in Oklahoma, where the non-binary student was murdered, right? And this Oklahoma state senator, almost in the same breath, saying that he feels for the family, he conceded that his heart goes out. Again, this is from an article regarding the teen's death, but he continued, "We are a Republican state, a supermajority in the House and the Senate. I represent a constituency that doesn't want that filth in Oklahoma." That filth, meaning in part, that student who died. Now, your constituency, my little friend, is not the majority of Republicans who are gleeful when someone dies. Your constituency is the entire state.
I think it's okay to say every one of us has been to high school. I can't imagine. I'll celebrate my 50th anniversary high school graduation in 2 years. And I hope I'd love to be able to go to the reunion because that'll be a lot of fun. I can't imagine what it would be like going to high school today. You feel different. You look different. You are different. Everybody's different. But where do you find that safe zone to be able to explore that? And that's what it's like. I think we forget about what we were when we were, at least I haven't. Sometimes leaders forget about what it was like to be that age. You know, if you're so sure of yourself, if you feel like you were so sure of yourself at 17, 18, yet when you by the time you get into your 40s and 50s, and all of a sudden, oh, wait a minute. It wasn't that cut and dried. Where's the compassion? And I think that's, you know, as we look about the whole aging process, what's the phrase? I wish I knew now what I didn't know then. Did I get that right?
I wish I knew then what I know now.
I wish I knew then what I know now. I don't, you know, with my dyslexia, I could go either way with it. So
I wish I didn't know what I knew.
That's pretty good too. But, you know, where's the compassion for people that might appear to be different from yourself?
Yeah, but beyond that, what is different? Like these weird lines, you know, that we draw.
What is normal?
So the reality is that we are, all of us, a bunch of scared people looking to huddle with the largest group of other scared people so that we can feel safe. And unfortunately, for some people, that means huddling with a pack of wolves. And for some people, it's huddling with the other sheep, you know, and whatever it is, we crave connection as human beings. And a large part of that connection, beyond just emotional development, it's just that very basic human need to feel safe, you know. And I listen, we all experience childhood trauma. Being a child is difficult,
right?
You know, and living in society now is hard, and living in society back then was hard. It's just hard, you know. And our parents visit upon us all sorts of, you know, behaviors that were learned from their childhood trauma, and it just goes on and on. There is no perfect childhood, right? that's just a reality. But the question is, well, what do we do with mm-hmm. that?
It's a fairy tale.
It is a fairy tale, depending on how you spell that in the context of this podcast. But
the thing is, don't piss off the fairies.
I'm so sorry. Please forgive me. But the question isn't, do we have childhood trauma? Because of course we have childhood trauma. The question is what do we do now?
Right.
It's not that I don't want to hear childhood trauma as an excuse for behavior. The reality is there are consequences to that, you know, very real consequences. But I don't think there's any excuse for cruelty. I don't think there's any excuse for being mean or bullying mm-hmm. or any of these other behaviors that are a result of people trying to grab power so that they can make sure that they feel safe. And the reason why I say there's no excuse, because there are plenty of safe places that you can go and you can connect with people and you can seek restoration, you can seek healing. You don't have to join the Republican Party, or you don't have to do all of these things that some people do to feel safe.
Mm-hmm. Or any political party. You can just be present to people.
I'm sorry, is my bias showing?
No comment.
Well, I think that one step in the right direction for all of this is everyone listening, recognize how you seek to feel safe. Just recognize right. it. Be cognizant of that. And really examine yourself and say, am I going to a positive place with that, or am I going to a negative place with that? You know, a lot of the struggle that we see happening are because people aren't introspective enough to recognize what they're doing and why they're doing it. You know, they just take it mm-hmm. as a matter of course. Oh, that's just the way life is. And you have to sometimes be cruel, or you have to sometimes be hard, or exhibit tough love, or any number of these bullshit phrases that we throw around to justify mean behavior, cruel behavior. So start by just doing a little bit of introspection. Are you unhappy? Are you not feeling safe? Are you feeling trapped? All of these things. Rather than lashing out, just reach out and look for some help.
Just reach out.
Email us. If now, I don't know if a lot of folks in that particular demographic would be listening to this podcast. But if you know someone who is like this, you know, and it's someone that you can offer support to or be a friend to, or give them our email address. I don't care. They can't do anything to me. Let them email me. And then we'll go from there. yesiam@aginggayfully.com.
We want to create a safe space for everybody who's listening to Aging Gayfully and who will be joining us on a travel adventure here real soon. So it's all good.
I kind of love that. I want to travel.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm ready.
All right, Chris. Well, I kind of just said it, but just to reiterate and put a bow on it, how can people get in touch with us and learn more about us?
You can email us at yesiam@aginggayfully.com. Visit us at aginggayfully.com and be looking for some travel and tours coming up with TLO Travel and Tours and Aging Gayfully here. There's some things in the works and it's all good.
Excellent. Alrighty, folks, until we talk to you next time, just make sure that whatever you do, do it gayfully.
Do it gayfully. That's right. I like that. Very good. Coming from a straight guy. Yeah.
There you go.
It's all good.
It's all good. All right, bye. Okay.